Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Car Stuff Podcast. I am Tom Appel. Thanks for joining us today. When you get a chance, do me a favor, check us out at consumerguide.com. That's where our 2024 Best Buy list lives. If you're looking for a new car or truck, you want to check out that list. Also, you can listen to back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage, but you should subscribe. That would make me happier. Jill Simonillo is out today. She didn't say where she's in, but in the passenger seat, in the co-pilot seat, is Paul Harold of the Sons of Speed. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Tom.
It's been a while.
Yes, it has.
Jill has been fairly consistent in her appearances lately.
Yes, she has.
But you're here. Thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit about the Sons of Speed before we go on.
Okay, we are a review company, and when we review cars, regardless of what type of car it is, we are looking for the soul of the car, the passion, with emphasis on speed.
Which is a fine niche to own and operate in.
That's what we're starting for.
I have a bit of surprise news.
What is it?
I'm very excited. I have a surprise guest coming up next month. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Malcolm Bricklin.
Okay.
Malcolm Bricklin.
All right. I'm sorry. Who's Malcolm Bricklin?
Malcolm Bricklin. Everyone knows who he is. They just may have forgotten his name. But Malcolm Bricklin was responsible for bringing Subaru to the U.S. in the 60s.
That Malcolm Bricklin. Okay.
Yeah. For bringing us the SV1 sports car, the Corvette competitor in the 70s. For bringing us Yugo in the 80s.
I was going to say the most famous car that you brought over, the Yugo.
The Yugo. And the funny thing about the Yugo, the car itself, probably not up to U.S. expectations, but somehow he managed to federalize a Yugoslavian vehicle and sell more than 100,000 of them, maybe a couple hundred thousand of them here. So crazy.
That is crazy.
And since then, he's been trying to bring Chinese cars to the U.S., and most recently, he has started an electric car company.
On his own. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So we'll be talking to Malcolm Bricklin. I don't know the date yet, but sometime in April.
Very cool.
That's a very big deal. You have a couple of new reviews we're going to talk about, or videos.
Yes.
We're going to talk about in a moment, but some big news last week. Did you follow the crazy Rivian news?
I did, yes. It is very, very interesting.
There were stories. Everyone knew that they had a press conference coming up last Thursday, and there were stories about Rivian and whether or not it was a viable company and sales not quite matching expectations, and they haven't gotten their costs where they need to be.
Yeah.
And they're expecting this year for the sale of the vehicles they're currently selling, the R1S and the R1T, to be flat. But they're hoping to make a little money on the cars because lithium prices, a key component in lithium-ion batteries, have come down. So they're thinking, yeah, we can make some money this year, maybe. It's not the most encouraging thing stockholders wanted to hear.
Yeah, exactly.
But then Thursday, they were going to show us a new compact vehicle, the R2. And they did that. Okay. And it looks cool. But then, and I can't believe that this didn't leak out, they showed us another vehicle, the R3, which is freaking adorable.
It is really, it's a great looking SUV.
It is a stubby little subcompact crossover with the mechanical bits of the R2, but it is shorter, it's going to be more affordable, and it looks like a serious off-roader.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the R2, and I think they call the one the R2X, I think is the
performance. The R2X is like their Baja kind of version of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, which is cool as heck. So we don't have prices on the little car, but we do on the R2, which is about $45,000.
Okay.
The other exciting news, if you don't live in Georgia, is that Rivian was going to build a factory in Georgia.
Yeah.
To build these vehicles in. They're going to pause that production and build them in the existing plant in Normal, Illinois, which means they can get to production sooner, and we should be seeing R2s as early as 2026.
That's good because they really need another vehicle.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone started in this industry with something expensive. And that's to hide the cost of the EV
sure.
mechanical bits. But like Lucid is stuck with a very expensive sedan right now.
Yes.
And they desperately need a compact crossover, which they're working on.
Absolutely, yes.
And then Rivian's the same deal. They've got this expensive SUV and pickup, which are very cool.
Well, they started with a pickup.
Yeah.
And that's always good because if you look at the number one selling car on the planet, the Ford F-150,
right.
which is a pickup. So I guess that was their logic there. Hey, let's come out with a pickup first. And then they came out with the SUV. But Lucid is I think, a little bit more hotter water than they are.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is going to be good. The other thing there, too, about pickup trucks, too, is for a little while, we all believed that the F-150 Lightning was going to be the hottest selling thing since sliced bread, and that didn't really work out.
No, it did not.
For a bunch of reasons. One, it turns out demand for electric pickups might not be that high, and then Ford just kept screwing around with the pricing.
Yes.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, that was not a good thing that they did.
No, and they also launched the vehicle before COVID, started goofing with the prices during COVID, and no one knew where demand really was. And this year, they decided to halve production.
Yeah, and of course, the first people that bought it kind of got screwed.
Yeah.
You know, they paid way over sticker, and you know how that goes.
Why do people do that? There are Cybertrucks right now listing for $250,000.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Why would you do that? Yeah. I worked for a company years and years and years ago that was trendy. It was a marketing and branding company, and I was doing market research work there. But they had to have the first PT Cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
So they went out and they paid way over list for a purple PT Cruiser that 3 months later was selling like a used car. Like, like they just ponied up $5,000 or $6,000 too much money for a completely average car that kind of looked cool.
Yeah.
What the heck? Other piece of electric car news, because all news is electric car.
That's true.
The Chevrolet Blazer EV launched last year to much fanfare, became the Motor Trend Vehicle of the Year, which seemed like a good thing.
And then...
and then, they recalled every single one of them for software problems. So there was a stop sale in the vehicle. They had to fix stuff. And it's interesting, too, because the Blazer EV is mechanically related to the Cadillac Lyriq.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
Which I have driven, and the Lyriq was great, and I did not have any. I had a lot of problems with it, but they were all my fault.
How so, Tom?
Well, this is interesting. With electric cars, there's a demo mode. So there's a mode that the dealership puts it into.
Oh, okay.
But that prevents you from doing things like keeping your car, your phone, Bluetooth connected.
Oh, okay.
So the reason my phone kept getting bumped and seriously pissing me off. Because I listened to
it. Well, that
music.
Would explain it.
Yeah, it was the fact that I was in demo mode. Okay. And if I'd done any research whatsoever, I would have known that. So,
but if they're giving you a press car for, I assume, was a week?
2 weeks, actually.
2 weeks. Wouldn't they take it out of demo mode for you?
Yes, normally. And the company that handles that stuff here in Chicago is usually really super good about that. This wasn't them.
Okay.
This
came
through a different channel.
Okay. Makes sense.
So, yeah. Our good friends deliver the GM products. Not their fault. So anyway, the Blazer EV is now on sale.
Okay.
And the prices have been cut dramatically.
Yes, I heard, yeah.
Like $5,000 to $6,000. Yep. And they now qualify for the federal tax credit,
yep.
So these are now, they were ridiculously expensive. Now they're like kind of normal. The cheapest version, the LT front wheel drive, was $57,000. It's now about $50,000. And if you apply the tax credit, it's about $42,500.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't seem crazy.
No, that's not crazy at all.
So good news there. So anyway, enough of that. Enough news. You guys have a couple of new videos.
Yes.
I just enjoyed them this morning.
Great.
Why don't we talk about the Dodge first? Because I want to dig into the Mercedes a little bit.
Okay, the Dodge Challenger Ghost, Black Ghost.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's a great car. I mean, it's called the last call because they are going bye-bye. So they kind of, Stellantis said, okay, let's make a few specialty versions of it. And that way...
A few? Didn't they make like... Dozens of
they were calling them all different names in limited quantities. So I mean, they were.
I got confused and disinterested at some point.
I gotta admit, they did milk it a bit, but but yeah, they did come up with some last call specialty versions, and we got our hands on the Black Ghost at Road America Racetrack. So
nice,
it was a lot of fun. That car is so powerful, it's like 840 plus.
So that's full Hellcat.
Yeah, it's beyond, actually.
Yeah.
Actually,
because it gets you the supercharged 6.2.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a retuned for even more horsepower over the standard Hellcat. So.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. And my son does all the editing of our videos. So,
oh, well, he does a great job.
Yeah. So what he did was he saw my lap and he saw Brendan's lap and he decided to like overlay them and... So we were actually ended up competing against each other without even knowing it.
It's you guys are side by side. It's seamless, and you guys are commenting at different points. It's very good.
And what's funny is we're almost saying the exact same thing. But
yes.
Again, we were separate we drove separately. We didn't drive the same time.
You guys both commented on the car's mass.
Yeah.
And how unsettling that was, and then how powerful the car was.
Yeah, yeah. And when you start to go right away off the line, there's like no traction at all. Like you were just sliding all over the place. But once it hooks up, it just goes.
You guys both talked about how you could feel the weight.
Yeah, it's a heavy car. Yeah,
it's kind of that's over 5,000 pounds, isn't it?
I have it on the video, but I forgot what it is.
Yeah, but it's a big dog. It's a heavy thing, and it's a big car.
Yeah.
And that was one. Now that's collectible. Obviously, there were 300 of those made.
Yeah.
And that's it. Those are gone now.
That's it.
So if you wanted to get one, you'd have to just see if a dealer still has one.
And also, get ready to pay.
If a dealer still has one, that means he's holding on to it. So yeah, yes, you're going to pay for it. Now this other car, you did a video, and this one does not feature you. It just has Brendan.
Just has Brendan. Yeah.
But an interesting car that I don't think most people even know exists.
Correct.
And a few years ago, Mercedes-Benz started doing stuff. With Mercedes Dash. So there's Mercedes-Benz, and that's most of their product lineup. And then there's Mercedes Maybach, which is their ultra-premium.
Ultra-luxury, yeah.
And there's Mercedes AMG.
Yeah.
Which the product you drove.
Which is their super performance.
Yeah, falls under that banner. Tell us about that car.
So that car is, it's not based off of the two-door GT. It's
right.
A whole different vehicle. But I have to say, kudos to AMG. They nailed it with this car.
You've driven it too?
Yes, I drove it too.
Cool.
It's extremely powerful, 630 horsepower. If you get the upgraded package, you get the carbon ceramic brakes and the 21-inch wheels and everything, but it's just amazingly quick and amazingly capable on a racetrack.
And amazingly expensive.
Yes, yes. It runs like 190 plus. You can easily get into 200 grand. But
wow.
But it's, I have to say, there's very little cars out there and even fewer four-door cars that you can go to the opera in. Right, your wife can apply makeup, lipstick, and perfectly, no problem, right? And yet you turn the dial from comfort to performance or sport plus, and that thing just becomes an animal. And it just, it was our fastest car around Road America at the last time we took out all the cars at the rally. So by a lot, like 5 or 6 seconds faster than the next fastest, you know? So it's amazing, this car.
I have to point something out before I make another comment, but you guys are both really good drivers.
Well, thank you.
And I think you're modest about that. I've watched a lot of your videos now, and I'm impressed by how skillfully you handle the car. And Brendan's reactions to this car were awesome.
Yeah.
And the first time he's out on the lap, he catches up with somebody.
Yes, that was so funny, because they knew this car was very powerful, so they kind of time us, but they tell us when we can go, right? And so they waited like an extra minute just to make sure that the car in front got through the racetrack before Brendan started. And he still, within like, I don't know, 45 seconds, a minute, he caught him.
That's hilarious. I've never driven a Miata. It was a Miata that he caught.
Yeah.
I've never driven a Miata around America, but I have driven a small and not especially powerful car, which was an early Boxster. Porsche Boxster, back when there's a normally aspirated 2.5 liter engine.
Yeah.
And it's still a joy to drive on that track, because the track can be technical.
Yeah.
But it's funny how, yeah, you could be caught up, because there's enough straightaways where power is your
that
friend.
That thing on a straightaway is just unstoppable.
But Brendan's reaction to how well that car, after having driven, and I don't know the relationship to when you drove the big Dodge and when you drove the Mercedes.
I think the Mercedes was the last car we took out.
Oh, well, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because the weight transition in the Dodge was so clumsy and so perfect, I guess. I think Brendan mentions it's a 4,700-pound car. So the Mercedes is heavy.
But you don't feel it.
Yeah, that was his point.
You don't feel it at all.
So you guys had a camera outside the car, too. I think it was getting the front passenger wheel.
Could be, yeah.
I don't know, but do you get the edge of the track, which is a really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a really nice piece. But the videos are great.
Thank
really
you.
Enjoyed them. You learn a lot about the cars. I think that's a fun way to do it. And we can see those videos where?
WeAreMotorDriven.com. It will take you right to the YouTube channel.
And you guys have a bunch of other videos there, too, that I haven't seen yet. Tell us about some of the other stuff.
We also are in collaboration with Rise and Drives with Harvey and also Jennifer Jensen. She does the Auto Exotica and the Median videos. So it's kind of nice, like under one umbrella, wearemotordriven.com, you can see a lot of different videos. And sometimes we are reviewing the same car, but we just have different takes on things. So
that's great.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
Yeah. So Harvey's a little bit consumer, and Jennifer's also sporty.
Sporty.
But the Median?
Yeah, Median is more.
That's more consumer.
Yeah, that's more consumer, yeah.
Yeah, it's all good stuff. All right. Well, I tell you what, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
And when we come back, we talk to Randy Dale of Nissan Product Planning about the new Sentra.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am Tom Appel. He's Paul Harold, sitting in for Jill Simonella. Paul, how's it going?
Doing well.
Now, you have a special listener today?
Yes, I do. A shout out to my father,
hey.
Paul Harold Sr. Yes, he's listening today.
Well, we appreciate that. So he's listening live?
Listening live, yes.
Okay, yeah. My folks listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
So there you go. This is the time of the show I usually mention to people that I am on Twitter.
You are?
Or
really?
X, yes. Yes, and I had a pretty good weekend of car spotting. For people who don't know, I drive around intentionally looking for weird, strange old cars or just stuff that's of interest only to me. I post the pictures on Twitter with the car spotter hashtag, and people seem to enjoy that.
You know, you find some amazing cars sometimes.
I saw a Saturn Sky Redline over the weekend.
A Redline, that's odd.
Yeah, the Sky was the analog to the Pontiac Solstice,
yeah.
And then that was the turbo version.
Okay.
With some good looks.
No, actually, they were pretty good-looking cars.
They looked nothing like the Solstice.
Yeah.
It was the opposite of badge engineering.
I like the Sky better, actually.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't know that's the popular opinion, but I might agree with you. So there you have it. So here's a story. I recently had a test car that surprised me a lot, and I think it was the nicest surprise of 2024 so far, and that was the Nissan Sentra, which is freshened for this year.
Okay.
And it is much better than I recall. And this freshening did, I think, a lot to improve how people are going to perceive this vehicle on a test drive. And to help us talk about this vehicle is Randy Dale. Randy is the Senior Manager of Product Planning at Nissan North America. Randy, how are you?
Excellent. How are you today?
I am good. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about what you do at Nissan.
I work in that mysterious department called product planning. I've been with Nissan for over 33 years. I've probably launched 20 some plus vehicles over that time, virtually almost everything in the portfolio. And when people ask me what I do, I actually tell them I predict the future, because that's what we do. And I don't know if your listeners are aware, but it takes us anywhere from a minimum of 5 to 6 years to get a product from the time you start thinking about it until it actually launches. And then it's in the market for another 5 to 6 years, which means I work anywhere from 3 to 10 years in the future at all the times.
Wow.
So that kind of what do customers want? What do they need? You're looking at a variety of things, not only what they want from an automotive sense, but even social and economic indicators that will influence what they buy in the years ahead. So in the end, you get a car. And when you walk a car, truck, or SUV, that when you walk into a dealership, I know I've done my job well, and people approach me and say, Randy, how did you know I wanted that? And they didn't realize that I had to figure out what they wanted 8 years ago.
So can you tell us about what's happening 10 years in the future?
I wish I could. I know, but I can't tell you.
They never do.
Thought I'd ask. Randy, Nissan's in a very interesting position, I think, in the American market, where it's one of the last manufacturers, one of the last popular brands, that actually has a serious suite of affordable vehicles. You've got the Versa, the Kicks, and now the Sentra. Not now the Sentra, but the Sentra as well, where the pricing is actually remarkably consumer-friendly and, I think, perfect for startup, for first-time buyers. Talk a little bit about Nissan's position in that particular segment and why it is still playing there while so many other manufacturers have abandoned the low end.
Yeah, and it always starts with, I always start with the customers. What do they want? What do they need? What are their lifestyles? What are the demands going to be on those customers in the years ahead? And affordability always echoes through in these lower segments. And I don't want to call them lower segments. It's just lower priced, more affordable segments. It just resonates through. each time. And what's key here is bringing people into the brand. Now, you're doing two things. Of course, you're giving them experience, a great experience in a Nissan vehicle, but at the same time, you're welcoming them into the Nissan family. And look, someone buying a Sentra, Versa, or Kicks, it might be their first new car.
Right.
They've previously driven a hand-me-down from their aunt, grandma, somebody gave them a vehicle, and now it's their first serious vehicle, which they purchased themselves. And, you know, how do you welcome them into the brand? How do you make them aware of Nissan-ness? And that's a reality, the DNA of what's in a Nissan product. And then welcome them into the brand to be future customers, to stay with us.
So I don't think I'm off base here, but when the Nissan Sentra was redesigned for 2024, it got some pretty nice sheet metal, a really roomy cabin, and some nice design and some nice tech. But ultimately, I found the vehicle just a little disappointing in terms of refinement, as it were. And it wasn't something I might want to commute in every day. The 2024 freshening has completely changed my mind about the Sentra. And I really want to talk about that car because I just finished my review of that last night. It's already published. And the vehicle now just strikes me as, it's still a crazy dollar value, but it's also more refined. It's more pleasant to be in. It's packed with tech. Talk about what you guys did for 2024. And then I need to know what the difference is between the old CVT and the new Xtronic CVT.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, very good questions. Well, we started with the enhancing the presence of the vehicle on the road, because that's key. Look, these are affordable vehicles, but that doesn't mean you want to drive around in something that looks like an economy box. No, you want something that you're proud of, proud to own, proud to be seen in, and feel good about your purchase. So it starts all with the exterior design. And we updated the front fascia for model year 24 in giving a new V-Motion generation to the Nissan V-Motion grille and front fascia to the vehicle, new wheels, 16 and 18-inch wheels, and in the back, the updated the rear fascia, the lower part of the rear fascia on the SR vehicle. And also, we're working with new colors and things like that that are in there. Essentially, what you're doing, because not everybody wants, right? We're talking about a sedan here. Not everybody wants a sedan. Not everybody wants an SUV. That's not true. There are still many, many customers that want a sedan for a lot of different reasons. And among them are younger people. Younger buyers see a sedan as being more sporty, more youthful, more into what they want to be. Heck, they grew up in SUVs, sitting right in the back of them, right? Nobody wants to drive their mom or dad's car, and nobody wants to drive their dad's sedan.
Are we at that point, Randy, where the sedan is hot again? Like young people are rejecting crossovers?
They never actually left.
Okay.
In some ways, they never left, and some are coming back to it. And now I'm starting to hear buyers who are, you know, up in age and have emptied their household and said, hey, I don't need an SUV anymore. I don't really want one. And they're starting to look for other things. So we take that all into consideration when we're building both the portfolio and when we're designing, as we were with the Sentra itself. And then to those refinements, and you talked about a more refining drive.
Uh-huh.
What that comes through? That comes through dedicated engineers and designers who really know their stuff. And I find them all the time. I spend a lot of time in Japan or San Diego at the design studio, and we talk about these things like, what does a customer want? What is the emotion? Remember I talked about that element of someone who says to me, Randy, how did you know? Well,
yes,
how did we
yes.
know? By spending hours and hours listening to customers, transferring that. And then it just can't come to the planner itself. You have to be able to communicate that all through the organization so the engineers understand and those who are testing understand. What do they want? What do they want to feel? Well, what do they want to feel? They want to feel that they're in a more upscale vehicle. And that's exactly what you were feeling, right? Through the suspension, through the motor, the way the CVT is tuned. Little things that are huge that people will never even look at, such as, you know, the rear suspension, the multi-link rear suspension. We didn't cheapen up back there. What multi-link? Because we knew that would give you the ride and handling characteristics, and that and the NVH inside to make sure you had a quiet ride. And you were talking about, you were asking me about the CVT and those
yes.
CVT updates. And here's what we did in there. We originally had one single pump that handled all speeds and all ranges. But we went to a dual pump. And what that did then was it kept one pump for your normal driving, but then under the high demands, that second pump would kick in. And what that did was lower friction. We wanted to lower friction through the entire experience of driving the vehicle. But that wasn't all. We also went with a wider gear ratio. Now, you would say, well, it's limitless, Randy, you can get a CVT, you can get anywhere. Yeah, but where it starts at the bottom and the top of the gear ratios is where we were able to expand a little bit more. So I think that's a bit what you were, the mysteries of what you were feeling in there. And then that and the contribution of lower friction parts throughout the inside and every inside the components that existed there. And that actually was a double benefit. There was one in your drive experience, but there was also one in the fuel economy. And now we've boosted our fuel economy up to 30 city, 40 highway as a result.
Well, in driving around Palatine, Illinois, which is where we record this and where I live, I averaged 34 MPG over a week of a test drive, which I thought was pretty darn great considering how much city driving I did. And I don't think that most people appreciate how efficient a CVT can be, but I have this theory about CVTs too, and that everyone, all my colleagues in the industry started driving with stepped gear, old school automatic transmissions. We expected there to be gear changes that we felt. And if you're a young driver, my daughter, for example, her car has a CVT. Actually, it's a Nissan. She drives a Juke. She doesn't care. She doesn't care about a CVT. She has no bad reaction to it whatsoever because that's just the normal for her. Mm-hmm. So some of this is generational, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You hit on it. Exactly. Great example. You could feel it right in your own house. And I know I have three young sons, too, all drive. And their view mimics that. And your daughter's view mimics of what I hear all across the country when I go and talk to customers that, you know, there's a new buyer that's coming. But even customers who grew up on ATs like ourselves, automatic transmissions and the stat, and you can feel the shift and everything, that even is a bit of an evolution that's happening there. Because if you can look at electric vehicles, which don't have any transmission at all.
Right.
And that sort of seamless drive, which in many ways echoes that of the same feeling you get from a CVT, right?
Oh,
and
that's true.
CVT that we have today with this new one, codenamed the UK28, that's much different than maybe what you would have experienced back in 2010 when people sort of had a negative view of it. A lot has happened in the last 14 years.
So, Randy, I want to talk about the interior of the Sentra a little bit. I used to have a terrible commute. I work from home now, but I used to have a terrible commute, and sporty wasn't really something I got to enjoy much on my drive. But the Sentra seems to be the, not perfect is a strong word, but it's an excellent vehicle for bad traffic, I think. It's refined, it's quiet. What happened to make the new car seem quieter? Was that just the transmission? And talk about the interior improvements. I'm really digging the red stitching. My test car was an SR, loaded with the key option package, and the interior was very nice. It was surprisingly nice. For 29 grand, I got a fully loaded compact sedan with everything I wanted, but maybe a bunch of power. But in my commute, I don't really need a bunch of power.
Right. Well, it goes back to what is this customer looking for? What do they want? They want to feel, and we wanted to deliver on this, that they were buying a product that was actually a class above. And if you look at that interior, it's not only the one that you had. It sounds like you had a full maybe SR or SV loaded, the SR portion of it. It goes right down to the base S grade. It still carries a lot of that same feeling. You know, when we launched that, when we originally did that interior just a few years before, Ward's Automotive actually voted us as, we received an award as the 10 best interiors when we launched that vehicle.
Well,
and we were up against some really major, shall we say, luxury brands. That I won't go on to say, but that were pretty, you know, six-figure vehicles that were in the same group that we were. And it was that. But what we wanted to do was deliver on that. Remember, I'll go back to when you're communicating to the stylist and the designers in here in the studios, what does that customer want? What are they looking for? They don't want to feel like they're driving, you know, mom's old car anymore. I got my own vehicle, and what does it mean? And how they feel when they're there. Even the Nissan-ness that goes in it, the three vents that go across the top mimics what the original Z cars had in them. And that sportiness feel that emulates through, which would have been, you know, gauges, tach and speedometer gauges and pressure and things like that years ago. But now, of course, it's feeding you HVAC. And then on the other side of it is just the dynamics of the vehicle, what we call NVH, right, in the business. But what does that mean? That really means how harsh the vehicle feels when you drive it, get some of that through in the suspension, At the same time, the quietness, what kind of glass we use, what kind of insulation we use, and most importantly, where do you put that insulation in the vehicle so that you're not adding weight but getting nothing from it, but what you're doing is you're putting it in the most critical areas, the lower the sounds, the wind noises, everything you get in it. Design of the mirrors, it all plays a part in it. But ultimately, it's that experience of what we're looking for. Did it feel like a class above? And then if we did, we did our job. If we didn't, go back to work.
So I want to ask you real quick about the premium package, because it's not an insubstantial cost given the overall price of the Sentra, but there's a lot of stuff in it. It's like a $2,500 package, and it includes Bose premium audio. And I'm curious what you think the take rate will be on the premium package, and to what extent young buyers or entry-level buyers are looking for premium audio. It seems like something like, my kid doesn't care at all about premium audio, right? She uses a little speaker. It sounds terrible. But I'm wondering who the market is for that audio system, which is very good, by the way.
Yeah. The you hit on it right away, right? We package the vehicles intently to make sure it's in an affordable price point for everyone to get what they want. And not only that, can they find the vehicle that they want? Buyers aren't like it was years ago where they would order it, wait 90 days, and it came in, and you're all excited, the dealer called you. Nowadays, it's like fast food, right? I want it now. And so you have to have available, but at the right price point. That's where it really gets to be critical. So we packaged these options, and besides that, what you also received in there were the Prematec seats, the six-way power driver seat, intelligent round view monitor, sun visors with illumination, heated steering wheel, Nissan Connect services, a Wi-Fi hotspot. It goes on and on and on of the things that you got in that vehicle. Things like audio and tech, it varies from buyer to buyer, and that's why I travel the country and I just don't talk to one or two people. I talk to hundreds virtually, and I watch every, shall we say, blog, YouTube page, Facebook page that comes out, and I'm scouring wherever I can. There's data everywhere. And there are audio files that exist out there. And so what we did was we put everything into one package to make it easy to find, still somewhat affordable. And, you know, there's things in there like sliding glass sunroof in there also. And to make sure that we had the right equipment at the right price for every part of the country, right? And so you can even look at things like, Bose stereo, but maybe younger people don't always worry about that so much because the way we all play music nowadays. But then there's other group that does like it. Remember, it's kind of bimodal with this. Uh-huh. Not only young customers. There's the 30-ish and under who buy vehicles like this, but then there's like the 50s and over that buy vehicles like this. Because in between somewhere, you have a family, you need the room, you need something, we need three rows, whatever we need, and then they come back to it again. So again, we're building a vehicle that's not only affordable, but meets the needs of every buyer who wants one.
Randy, hi, this is Paul. I just had a quick question. I know it's kind of a taboo topic to ask about future product, but do you see a hybrid in the future for the Sentra, or is it because it already gets sort of the gas mileage, you know, 30 city, 40 highway, that it's just not worth the extra cost to do that?
Okay, Paul, that was a good question that tricked me into telling you about the future, which I can't, but I can tell you that.
I tried really hard.
No, but let me phrase it this way. Nissan innovation, and that coupled with the customers and technology that's down the road, we look at it. I can tell you, we look at absolutely everything. So I can't disclose what we're going to do in the future, whether we would or we're not, or what other powertrains we're looking at. But let me tell you, we're open to it. We look at it. Look, not everybody has a vehicle. The evolution of the EV, even if you look at the most optimistic forecast of EV, not everyone will be able to have an EV. Look, customers living in places where they don't have a garage or a place to plug in, they still have to come back to an ICE engine vehicle and some sort of form, as you said, hybrid or otherwise powertrain. And so, yes, it's a key part of the market, and we don't ignore looking at anything.
I've got one last question for you, sir, as we run out of time, and I think it's the most important question. Despite the fact that it costs extra, I see Monarch Orange Sentras everywhere, as well as I see Monarch Orange versions of the Versa and the Kicks. What is it about that color, and what is exactly the take rate on it? Because it is a spectacular color, and it looks very premium.
Thank you. I have to thank their design studio in La Jolla, California, for that one. That color is super hot. It runs around the 10 to 12%, depending on where you're at in the country and who wants it.
And despite it being extra cost, that's interesting.
Hot.
Yeah.
Yes, that's for that color itself. You know, it exemplifies, one serious point, though, when you talk about colors like that. It depends on the body style and how you apply it, because those colors won't work on every body style. And again, it goes back to what you're starting with, the colors, how they look in the light and dark. Not every car is sold in Miami or Southern California. And
right.
That's also be concerned. What does it look like in the Northeast or Northwest, where it might be a cloudier, rainy day? And that one resonates through in any of those cases.
So we're out of time here, Randy, but if someone is looking for a compact sedan, what one thing about the Sentra should they know?
They should know about the driving experience. From the time they look at the vehicle design to the seamless integration when they get inside with their mobile device that they're carrying, and keep in mind the ride handling and quietness for that premium upscale ride that they get from the vehicle.
Sounds great. Randy, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
That was Randy Dale, Senior Manager of Product Planning at Nissan. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. He's Paul Harold, sitting in for Jill Simonello. Paul, how can people find you and your folks in the digital ether?
Easiest way is to go to wearemotordriven.com.
People should do that.
Thank you.
All right, you had asked me before we went on air today whether or not today's quiz was going to be hard. I think it's hard.
Thank you, Tom. Really appreciate it.
That's my guess. I think it's hard.
Okay.
Today's topic is... Who made more?
Okay.
Are you ready? This is very easy on some level. You just need to tell me, of the two countries I'm going to tell you, which country produced more cars in 2023?
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Estonia or Bulgaria? I'm kidding. I'm kidding. The first one is actually the U.S. or China?
Probably China.
Yep, by a lot. Yeah, 26 million in China. I have these backwards, but I happen to know that that's wrong. It's 26 million in China, just 9.2 million in the U.S.
Okay.
You are on the board.
Great.
See, not hard.
Yeah, that was easy.
All right, the next one is India or Germany?
India.
Is that your final answer? Based on India?
Germany.
Well, no.
Okay,
I'm not trying to move.
All right, okay, India.
It is India.
Yes, India
makes
a
lot of cars.
Well, they got Tata and all those.
The brand we don't hear much about is I think it's called Maruti Suzuki, which is a joint venture with Suzuki, but they build cars there, and they're very small, very affordable cars, and they crank out tons of those.
Okay.
But 4.4 million cars built in India last year, 3.3 in Germany.
Okay.
You have 2 points, so it's looking like this might be easy. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Which country produced more cars in 2023, Mexico or Germany?
Now I'm going to go with Mexico.
Going to go with Mexico?
Yeah.
All right. You're correct. By a lot.
Okay.
By a lot. 3.1 million in Mexico, just 1.4 in Germany. You have 3 points.
Wait. Didn't you just say in the last Germany was... 3.3 million?
Oh, wait. That's very weird. I'm sorry. I'm looking... You know what? You didn't get that one. Yeah, it's Mexico 3-1, Germany 3-3.
Ah, okay. So that was, that's what I was saying.
Thanks for fixing that for me. Yeah, this is why I need an editor or an assistant or a slave, something. I need help. All right. So, you've got two of the three.
It's funny because with all the manufacturing factories that they put down in Mexico now. Even BMW has a factory now in Mexico. So
there's a lot coming out of Mexico.
I'm kind of surprised that Germany still makes more.
We just mentioned the Blazer EV. I think that's made in Mexico too.
Oh, okay.
I got to check it. But it qualifies for the tax credit. Oh, but it's a NAFTA. And now it's a USMCA country. So
okay.
I think we're good there. All right. There you go. The other thing about Germany is that Tesla's now cranking out cars there.
Yeah.
They've got that Berlin factory.
Yep.
So that's beefing up that number. All right. You've got two of the three. Germany actually builds a little bit more than Mexico. Which country produces more in 2023? Which produced, South Korea or Canada?
South Korea.
Yeah, by a lot.
Yeah.
3.5 million units there, 1.1 in Canada. And General Motors builds a lot of cars in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
The new Trax
is
very, I don't know if it's popular. I expect it's going to be popular.
It's a great car, actually, for the cost, especially considered. It's really good.
I'm astonished by how good that car is. Making it bigger was everything they needed to do, because now you can put four of me in there. Mm-hmm. It's surprisingly refined. And we talked about young buyers not having the same problems with things that we might as more mature buyers with expectations. They're not going to care that it's a three-cylinder engine.
Correct. I mean, it's comfortable. It's actually quiet. It's got a nice ride.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing not to like there.
If you drive that thing and just fixate on the engine, you will feel the weird lumpiness as you come to a stop.
Yeah.
But it's really subtle.
Yeah.
It should not prevent anyone from buying that car. All right. You've got three. Which country produced more cars in 2023, Paul? Russia or France?
I'm going to go with France.
You would think so.
It's Russia, actually?
It's Russia by a very thin margin, 1.6 million cars.
Okay.
But Russia used to build a lot more cars.
Yeah.
And then they got busy doing whatever they're doing. So it's Russia 1.6, France 1.4. You have three. You've already won.
Excellent.
You've already won. Congratulations. We have the bonus question, which is always, of course, a topic related to what we've been discussing so far in the show. Are you ready?
Yes.
According to the unlikely source, The Hill, which I think is usually a political source, isn't it?
Kind of sounds that way, yeah.
I think it always shows up. Yeah, it shows up in my Yahoo newsfeed all the time. And I'm old, so I have a Yahoo newsfeed. According to The Hill, which of the following was the most popular male dog name of 2023? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Charlie, Max, Cooper, or Milo? All good dog names.
All good dog names, yep. Somehow, I think it's Max, but Cooper's sticking out. Let me go with Max.
It's Charlie.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, these are them in order. Charlie, Max, Cooper, and Milo, male dog names. Here's the thing about dog names. You didn't get the bonus question. I'm going to sign this here for you. Very good. You've won. Here's the thing about dog names. In Chicago, if you walk around Chicago, like especially around the beach, you will see lots of single guys with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
If they call to their dog, there's only two names those dogs have. And you will hear their name. Murphy or Wrigley?
Really?
I think every male dog in Chicago owned by a single guy is named Murphy or Wrigley.
It kind of makes sense.
I guess. It gets old pretty fast. And if you go to like a Chicago dog park, I guess every dog just comes when you yell at it. So here you go. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
You passed the quiz very quickly. We have time to kill.
Excellent.
Well, we talked about entry-level cars, and we talked about the Chevrolet Trax, which is a much better vehicle than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Starting price of $22,000, really hard to argue with. Like, if you're looking for a first-time car, good way to go. Also, it accommodates tall people nicely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got that higher roof line. Like, the seats are actually kind of low in it, so it's...
Yeah.
It actually feels kind of car-ish, because you're not really up high. You're higher than a car, but... Not you don't have that like really off the floor feel to it.
The other thing that Chevy did with that pretty successfully, and this is true of a couple of vehicles I've driven recently, the interior isn't nice, but it's nice enough.
Yeah,
like there's going to be a lot of hard plastic because this is a $22,000 crossover,
and it's a GM,
and it's well there's that too. But I just drove the Chevy Trailblazer, which is an interesting vehicle because it's actually slightly smaller than the Trax. I don't know how that happened, what product planning meeting someone didn't go to.
That is weird, yeah.
It's slightly smaller, but it's much upscale.
Mm-hmm.
But still relatively affordable. That has a really nice interior. And that has all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Which you can't get with the Trax. But it gets very confusing because there's a 1.2-liter three-cylinder engine and a 1.3-liter three-cylinder engine. And I'm like,
Was there really a need for...
It's very strange because if you go front-wheel drive with either one of them, you get a CVT. Otherwise, you get a 9-speed automatic. Okay. But if you get all-wheel drive, you automatically get a 9-speed automatic and the 1.3. Very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
But a very nice car.
But I will say, I think the company that forced everybody to up their game on interiors had to be Hyundai.
Yeah.
Because when they came out, I mean, I won't say the first Hyundais, but later on.
No. The first Hyundais were terrible.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the late 80s. You were very young then.
Yes. I was 10.
Yeah.
recently, Hyundais and Kias even, they just knocked interiors out of the park. And they left the competition they couldn't believe it. So now they're all upping their game.
There was a time where one of our editors at Consumer Guide went to Volkswagen to ask a question, and they had just launched a new generation of the Jetta. This might be two generations ago. And the interior was mildly disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
But then they did a GLI version of that vehicle, and the dash top was very nice and softly textured, and other elements of the interior were soft touch. And one of our editors called Volkswagen and got them to kind of cough up a number about what that interior cost them extra. And the number he got was $175. I don't know how accurate that number was, and that number is very old, but it puts things into an interesting perspective.
It certainly does.
When you're trying to contain costs on a vehicle, I guess every little thing matters. And maybe sometimes when you're trying to contain costs, maybe don't.
Yeah, but you also have to look at it the other way. You take $175, and when you multiply it by 60,000,
yeah, right. It's real. All of a sudden, you're talking about real money.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it is funny how that works. And you talked about Hyundai interiors, and I just got out of the Palisade, which is their large three-row crossover.
Yeah.
And yeah, wow. And the thing is, here's the funny thing about that. I'm not even wowed anymore. I'm used to Hyundai interiors being that nice.
Correct.
Which is almost a bad thing because I should still be surprised by how good that is.
And what's nice is the materials aren't expensive. Like they're not using like aluminum or, but they just make it look nice.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a funny, this is a long time ago when there was still a Mercury. So maybe around 2008 or so. I went to a MAMA meeting, a Midwest Automotive Midwest Automotive Media Association meeting. And the presenting company was Mercury.
Okay.
And at the time, there was the Ford, I think it was still called the 500.
Okay.
And there was the Mercury, what was the Mercury version of that called?
Oh, gosh.
But they were talking about that vehicle. And the interesting thing was-
The Marauder, was it?
No. No, it wasn't the Marauder. Okay. That was based on the Crown Vic.
Okay.
It'll come to me in a moment. But the interesting thing about the two cars, they were very similar, a little too similar. But the Mercury was going to get the better interior. So that was going to be like Mercury's branding thing.
Yeah.
This was right before they decided to kill Mercury. So take all of this with a grain of salt. But they had developed or started using some supplier-based material that they would spray on hard surfaces that gave it some texture.
Okay.
I'm like, I don't know why you're telling the media this, because this is just making me more cynical than ever before. But on the door top, right, the door top right by the side window, was this hard surface that had been sprayed with this textured material that gave it a leatherette finish. And it did indeed give a little if you touched it.
Okay.
And additionally, it wasn't cold to the touch, which is kind of an indicator that you're dealing with cheap materials.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the most convincing thing in the world. It's like this is the cheapest way you can make this soft touch. I'm not sure this is good, and I don't know why you're telling us this. But you've...
Montego, was it?
That was it?
Yep, okay.
Yep. The Montego, yeah.
Montego.
That was a really weird callback name from the 70s. Like, no one cared about the Montego in the 70s, and we really don't care about it now. And I think sales demonstrated that. But you talked about Hyundai interiors. If you go to Hyundai's luxury brand Genesis.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
What the heck?
Yeah. They look like Bentleys.
That is the comparison I've actually been making, that the interiors look like Bentleys. And you wonder what the cost is to that, because they don't seem to be holding back at all.
No.
Really nicely finished bits. The things that surround knobs and buttons feel like metal. They're cool to the touch.
Yep.
And they shine and they don't feel like plastic.
They got bezels around everything. Yep. It's really nice. It's like almost like a Swiss watch feel to it.
And the thing that doesn't seem to matter as much to people as it once did, but if you drive a Mercedes or a BMW, especially a higher end one, that when you move a knob, it feels weighted.
Mm-hmm.
It just has a really good sense of substance to it.
Yeah.
And then that's something that Genesis is doing as well. And it's funny because we've had conversations, Jill and I have had conversations about how Genesis might be less off-putting to women than BMW or Mercedes, because they don't really fixate on performance. It's really about the ownership experience. And there's obviously these unbelievably over-the-top interiors.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what's doing this. I think...
I agree. I think that's how they're nailing it.
And we know the marketing manager over there, Wendy Orthman, used to be a colleague of ours here in the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. She's now the marketing manager for Genesis. And I think that's part of what she's going for. You know, it's not to make it female-friendly. It's to make it less daunting, I think. Because if you look at BMW and if you look at... Mercedes, they have a couple of cars that probably appeal to families, mm-hmm. and specifically to women, like the small crossovers, a GLC or a GLE or an X3 or something like that. But for the most part, I think the rest of their product lineup is pretty masculine.
Yeah. And it's very complex looking. When you go in there, it's almost overwhelming when you sit down in like the EQS and stuff. I mean, it's almost overwhelming. I think what Genesis does correctly is it's clean and simple and doesn't look overwhelming at all. You get in there and it looks inviting.
I'm glad you said that, because the simple part, especially when you get to the touchscreen, the home screen is divided up into like almost like pages.
Yeah.
There are these, they're about the size of a cell phone, actually, mm-hmm. the size and shape of a cell phone, and you just scroll by swiping through.
Yeah, it's very intuitive.
Yeah, and it's surprisingly intuitive, very friendly, easy to find, and it works very quickly, and then you just press the thing you want. Here's the thing I don't need. When I'm going to media, little complaint about Genesis. It's minor, but I don't need it. If you're going to the media page, I don't need the nature sounds thing as an option. That should be a submenu, and I should never have to see that, because I never want nature sounds in my car.
What about the waterfall?
Yes. See, I don't need that.
Or, wait, what else do they have?
Also, I think...
Forest. They have forest?
Forest, yeah.
Ocean?
I don't need any of that.
Yeah, okay.
I don't need any of that. That's what music's for. The funny thing, too, is I think... I don't know if they're connected or not. I might be wrong here. The background screen images might be associated with those, but I'm not sure, because you can change those.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I think they are actually, yeah.
Which reminds me that the Lincoln Nautilus coming out now,
yeah,
is available with a scented cabin.
Yep.
So if for some reason you want your car to wear perfume or a cologne, it can.
It's like the Disney World ride. Soaring, whatever, when you're going over the orange fields, they blast the orange fragrance into the theater there. So you really feel it. I guess that's what Lincoln wants to do now.
I don't know. Jill and I have talked a lot about subscription services, and not subscribing to the vehicle, but the services on the vehicle that might be available at a subscription price. I will not pay for cents.
We're getting monthly subscribed to just over the top. So I think people are putting a kibosh on a lot of that.
It's funny too, because like Toyota experimented with like a heated seat, or was that BMW?
BMW.
Yeah.
And they got hell for it. Oh my God.
But everyone's going to try something.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that Toyota vehicles that we get in the test fleet now are available with a very premium navigation system to which you have to subscribe.
Okay.
Now, there's a lot of things that come with it, including traffic prediction and alternative routes.
And
stuff.
I bet you they probably give you like 30 or 90 days free, so you can get used to it, and then they take it away.
but Buick, we're running out of time here, but Buick got into trouble too for forcing people to take their subscription service. Do you remember this about a year ago? I think Buick Enclave. But there were certain Buick models, and maybe it was the Envision, came standard with a subscription.
Okay.
Like you had to prepay for it. And it's like, oh, I don't know if people are going to like that.
Like I said, people are done with the subscription stuff. Nobody wants them.
No, they don't. And
we get enough through Netflix and everything else. We don't need our cars to be the same way.
The challenge for manufacturers is to actually offer a service that people want to pay for.
Yeah.
But you cannot convert the things we already get for free into things we're going to pay
Correct.
For. And that's
Correct.
What we're learning. Heated seats, not going to happen.
Yep.
Guess what we did?
We went through another hour.
Thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely, Tom.
I appreciate it. Thanks for filling in. Jill is back next week. Thanks to Randy Dale of Nissan for joining us today. Thanks for Paul Harold of the Sons of Speed for sitting in for Jill. Thanks to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. And as always, thanks to my friends and mentors, Steve and Johnny. I will be joining them this coming Saturday at midnight Chicago time if you want to listen in on WGN Radio in Chicago.
Sounds great.
All right. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Next week.
Remember remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.